Vietnam, Nixon swept into the White House in 1968 and 1972, accompanied by a graceless, imperious, and vindictive political style. Under threat of impeachment due to the Watergate scandal, he resigned in disgrace in 1974. As for accomplishments, President Nixon did reestablish political ties with China, but had himself worked for 20 years to keep that red door closed. He bombed Cambodia to hurry the end of the Vietnam War, an incursion that set the Khmer Rouge on the road to murdering a million people. In 1973, Nixon did end the Vietnam War, a botched retreat, really, followed by the 1975 fall of Saigon. At home, Richard Nixon established the Environmental Protection Agency and approved the Endangered Species Act. Former Senator George McGovern, defeated by Nixon in 1972, noted that his domestic policies really weren't conservative, including support for federal nutrition programs. But Nixon was the first modern president to nearly destroy the presidency because of his core belief that when the president does it, that means it is not illegal. His executive criminality, Watergate, an endless saga of deceit, dishonesty, and denials, followed a bungled burglary of Democrats' national headquarters. As former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said, Nixon was a strange mixture of calculation, deviousness, idealism, tenderness, tawdriness, courage, and daring, but a man who wanted to be remembered for his idealism. Less widely quoted from Kissinger, think what this man could have done if anyone had ever loved him. Until next time, when we visit Nixon's birthplace and museum, this is Kim Weir for Up the Road.
I thought that was a very perceptive analysis. Stop just a second. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening to Ecotopia, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. Tonight, our topic is groundwater in Northern California. Our guest will be Jim Brobeck. He's the water policy and analyst for Aqualliance, which defends those waters. To open, you've already heard the first couple bars of it. I'm going to try it again. Here's Hidden Waters. It was written, played, and sung by the versatile Jim Brobeck. Jim, we need your phone number again, and we'll call you on the studio line, please. 521. 4880. Okay, Susan will call you in just a moment.
By the salmon, the water over ground means everything. Oh, yeah, got to fight to keep our underground water where we need it, right here, right.
Those Hidden Waters, performed and played by Jim Brobeck. We'll have him on the air in just a couple of minutes. Want to tell you that Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Lily's Brazilian Bistro, offering traditional Brazilian cuisine made from fresh, locally sourced organic ingredients in the heart of downtown Chico. Lily's Brazilian Bistro serves traditional Brazilian dishes as diverse and exciting and colorful as Brazil itself. Located at 142 Broadway, they're open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. with dine-in and outdoor seating. More information, including to-go orders and reservations, at 530-3999-0675 and on Facebook and Instagram.
His number is still busy.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the North State Symphony performing Holiday Pops December 9, 10, and 11. This concert showcases a wide range of holiday music, everything from Nutcracker to Jingle Bells, including a sing-along for the audience and a featured performance by soloist Dawn Weiss. More information and tickets at northstatesymphony.org. As you probably could hear, because we didn't turn off the microphone, having a little difficulty reaching our guest, Jim Brobeck. We'll listen to a little bit of Artie Garfunkel, Bridge Over Covered Water.
When you're weary
This is the Comedy of Errors show on KZFR 90.1. Ironically, or maybe it's not irony, we were just talking with Mary Vogel of Chico State University. She's did an interview of us talking about the years we've been on the show, which turns out all the way since 2008. This is our 697th show. And as we regularly remind people, we are not in total control of the technology. So we're having a little trouble reaching our guest, Jim Brobeck. Going to spend another few minutes with you. Here's It's a Hard Rain by Bob. We might have Barbara Vlamis on the line in just a moment. Sorry about that, listeners. We got a good show coming up. We're going to talk first about the SGMA, S-G-M-A program in Butte County. Talking a little bit about it's about groundwater storage. We're under state mandate to.
I'm going to put you on hold and we'll put you right on air.
Susan says we're going to put somebody on hold and get them on the air right now.
Okay, hold on.
Okay. Thank you, folks. Hopes this helps make your Christmas a little merrier than it might have been. It's not doing much for our Christmas, I'll tell you that.
Okay, let's see if we got
Barbara. All right, we've got Barbara Vlamis on the line. Now, Barbara is the executive director of Aqua Alliance. She's been on this show a number of times. She is our most frequent guest. Barbara does remarkable work with Aqua Alliance in helping to protect North State waters. So, Barbara, what we wanted to talk about a little bit tonight was first, a little bit about the history and the status of groundwater in the North State, and then we want to get to SGMA, and then finally talk about what you and Jim Brobeck would do if you were the water czars of the Central Valley. What kinds of commandments would you put in place? But first, welcome, Barbara Vlamis. Thank you for stepping in.
Absolutely, and I hope you and your audience will indulge me. I was deeply involved in my thinking and writing comments on the one tunnel draft environmental impact report, so this is quite a segue in my thinking. But
maybe not. Let's start with the one tunnel project, the two tunnel project. I mean, these are presented as solutions to long time alleged problems in the flow of water to Southern California. So maybe you could give us a little bit of that history, and then we'll move towards SGMA.
Sure. The one tunnel, which is the latest version of what was once the peripheral canal in the 80s that was shot down by voters in 1982, became another effort called the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which became the Water Fix, which was the two-tunnel project, and now we're down to a one-tunnel project with Governor Newsom pushing it. Mm-hmm. And the whole reason for having these ways of routing water around the Delta is to get more of it out of the Sacramento River to send to Point South, mostly to agriculture, but also to the urbans that haven't stepped up already in becoming more self-sufficient, because mm-hmm. some of them have.
Yeah, but I was going to say, my sense is that the cities have done, on the whole, a pretty good job. I've spoken both about Los Angeles and Las Vegas, which has done some pretty remarkable stuff to cut down on its use, while agriculture continues, but the latest statistic I've heard, 80% of our state water goes to agriculture.
Yes, that's the general figure that's accurate. Yeah, so the tunnel is to get more water south. You know, it's true that there are some jurisdictions they want to keep having urban sprawl and haven't done such a great job at conserving, but as you point out, the amount of water urban urbans use is infinitesimal compared to what agriculture uses mm-hmm. in California. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that's what the tunnel is. That's what I'm working on. The environmental impact report is out, and the comments are due December 6th.
Okay. Another set of comments are due. The Sigma, tell us about Sigma. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I always put a Y in there, S-Y-G-M-A, but it's S-G-M-A.
M-A. The Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that was passed in 2014.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mandate or otherwise set into motion?
Well, it was the state's first real attempt at doing anything to regulate groundwater. Before that, it was could be considered the Wild West. Anybody that put in a straw and had overlying land could use water underneath, and still can at this point. Though it was approved in 2014, it is just now the documents, the plans that were created are in the throes of the DWR approval process. Some of them, the more seriously overdrafted basins, had to get theirs in 2020. Butte County, Glenn, Colusa, and those folks, they had to get theirs in this January.
Mm-hmm.
And so there isn't much that's happened on the ground from any of these things. It's all been paperwork and studies and mostly consultants getting rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want me to launch into our participation in the comment period on those plans, but that's what we did late last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we prepared to litigate because some of these plans are so awful, and we have filed lawsuits on three of them up here.
Barbara, can we just step back a little bit before we go forward? And that is
absolutely
when we're talking about the when we're talking about Sigma, what is Sigma covering? What is the Central Valley hydrology that they're trying to manage, and how has it been kind of parceled out until now? You said anybody who stuck a straw on the ground could take water. So that's the status now. And where is this water?
Well, you're asking for a lot of information.
I know,
yes,
I am.
Groundwater is under the ground. We can't see it. It's in different layers of what we call aquifers or groundwater basins.
Mm-hmm.
And some people call them underground lakes. I don't like to call it that.
No,
but
no.
Anyway, it's water that is in saturated soil that, you know, humans figured out with pumps and drilling holes, you can extract a certain amount of water to use. And in California, it's supposed to be for beneficial use, to grow crops on a land, to have a home and a vegetable garden, you know, whatever. And so those were the laws in the past, is that you had overlying land, you could put in a well as long as you put it to beneficial use on your land. Unfortunately, it's like most things in our modern capitalist society, people overuse everything, pushing things to the brink, and many groundwater basins in parts of California are devastated,
right.
and the soils have collapsed from so much withdrawal of water. Up here, we're still relatively okay, but please catch that caveat. You know, there mm-hmm. are problems up here, and there are people that actually would like to make it worse as far as Aqua Alliance is concerned, which is why we, and Jim, through his participation specifically in the VINA groundwater sustainability planning mm-hmm. effort, strenuously opposed many of the steps they took and what they wanted to put in their plan. And to deaf ears, basically, and
right.
that's why we've sued over three of these. But it's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. You know, it sounds like it's supposed to save our basins. One would have hoped so, but what we have observed, it basically has accelerated business as usual for for special interests to become more dominant in water marketing, and it's just moved to the groundwater basins from what has already occurred with the surface waters.
I remain a little perplexed over these overlapping agencies, specifically in our area. Wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what are the VINA, the Wyandotte, and the Butte sub-basins, and how do those authorities interact? And then if we wanted to throw it in, what is the Tuscan Water Authority, and how do they enter into the equation?
Well, I would encourage people to trying to explain it on the phone, to explain geography is not going to be easy.
No, it's not.
But for people that know Butte County, these basins are, these sub-basins are in the valley portions of the county of Butte. VINA is in the northern part, and it goes from the Butte County line in the north, basically down to a little south of Durham. The Butte sub-basin starts with its northern boundary right there, a little south of Durham, and goes down to the end of the southern border of Butte County, again in the valley. So that's mostly the rice, as I call them, the Rice Boys area. And then Wyandotte is over by Oroville,
mm-hmm.
you know, where there's Wyandotte Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how the county was laid out by the powers that be in the Butte County Water Department.
And then there's the Tuscan Water District, which would overlap with some of it. It has separate purposes, but at the same time, when Tuscan was being proposed, they said they merely wanted to implement whatever SGMA decides. They were not trying anything revolutionary new. I think we were all skeptical of that claim, but maybe you could clarify for us where Tuscan fits in.
Well, if people don't really understand what the sub-basins are doing, I don't think they'll understand what Tuscan is supposed to do. Could we back up and talk about what the VINA, the
yes.
Butte,
yes.
and the Wyandotte
yeah,
are
sure.
supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, they had to form a governance structure, you could understand. I think your listening audience as well. So they have a board. VINA has an advisory committee. And, you know, if you're going to have a decision-making process, you had to have governance. And the county has played a heavy role in all three of the sub-basins, pulling in money for consultants, helping facilitate meetings. And so their task initially was to form a board and to start planning for a plan. It's kind of like a general plan, as I think
mm-hmm.
of it. You know, counties, cities have to have general plans to develop land. Well, to participate in the SGMA game, you have to have a sustainable groundwater management plan. And so that's what they were working towards, and all of the three in Butte County had to be turned in January of this year. Now, they pulled together lots of material. There's, you know, some of what's in the planning is helpful from a kind of a reference perspective, but where they are choosing to head in the VINA and the Butte in particular is towards a very destructive way of dealing with groundwater that will harm, as Aqua Alliance sees it, harm small users, land, you know, residential, people with residential wells, small farms, and basically leave them in the dust while the larger agricultural people in Butte County and in alliance with others outside the county will start moving towards changing the ownership of groundwater in our basin,
mm-hmm.
in our large basin, not in the sub-basins, but, you know, the large
mm-hmm.
Basin of the Tuscan Aquifer, which covers a little of Tehama County, most of Butte, and in the valley, and then it goes over into Glenn County and a teeny bit into Colusa. So they've taken the playbook right out of DWR's, you know, right off of DWR's shelf, basically, about planning to create recharge basins to start filling gaps where the groundwater is starting to drop. Instead of thinking about how do we manage a resource for the benefit of everyone and not change ownership, which recharge does, and I can explain that further later, they're moving into this effort that DWR has pushed for almost 40 years, and as far as we're concerned, is to get the state, on the groundwater basin up here so it can be marketed, water can be marketed and moved out of here for the more lucrative agriculture and urban areas south of here.
So it's not really about sustaining groundwater, it's about moving it elsewhere for profit.
That's what's on paper. I mean, you wouldn't think that that's what the law created, but they allowed the local jurisdictions to come up with whatever they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are beholden to DWR. And, you know, these are the kind of ideas that come from, you know, the supposedly knowledgeable people in the water world. And, you know, we have, like I said, filed 3 lawsuits because we find it just egregious that our local farmers, some of them, not all, and our local government is preparing to destroy our valley as has been done in the San Joaquin already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Barbara, I want to thank you. You stepped in. I think what we're going to do now is play a little Bob Dylan, It's a Hard Rain. We'll try to get Jimmy back on. He had some other topics to address. But let me also say, by way of full disclosure, I'm a member of the board of Aqua Alliance, in no small measure because Barbara and Jim Brobeck came on this show, and I said, this is an exciting organization. I need to get involved. People can always learn more about Aqua Alliance at www.aqualliance.net, and I would urge you to do that. Susan is signaling something.
We'll make sure Barbara stays on.
Okay. We're going to put on little Bob Dylan. We're not sure. We may cut you off, Barbara. If so, we thank you and apologize, and we'll see what we can do.
All righty.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? My darling young one, I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain. You're gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. Men with their hammers a-bleeding.
covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, and it's hard, it's hard rain. They're gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? Heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were blazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. Are gonna fall. Oh, what did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. Man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. Another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. Rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty.
We do have Jim Brobeck on the line now. I do apologize for that, all that scrambling around. After all the shows we have done, we never know quite what's going to happen next. Welcome, Jim Brobeck, to Ecotopia.
I sure appreciate you giving me a call. And I blame it on AT&T. I was waiting by my phone, and my phone was not in use. Apparently, you were getting a busy signal, so
yeah.
You know yep. What's going on.
Well, we live up in the hill.
Fill in the gap.
We can do testimonials about AT&T as well. Well,
hey, let's get down to water, though.
Okay, we talked with Barbara. She outlined Sigma, talked a little bit about the Tuscan Aquifer District. I don't know if you had a chance to hear that. I guess what I'd like to...
I was listening to the whole thing, and... You know, I'm glad Barbara mentioned that I was such an active participant in the Sigma process as the environmental representative on the VINA GSA. I've attended every single meeting along with several other of my colleagues, most notably the Todd Green, who Dr. Todd Green, who is the a professor of geology, agreed with me that the final plan had some egregiously low targets for groundwater management. And what Barbara was talking about, this 40-year plan, it appears that the plan is to operate the aquifer underneath Butte County and portions of Glenn County and Tehama County in a very aggressive manner to lower it to create storage space mm-hmm. for so-called recharge projects. I prefer to call recharge projects water bank projects.
Yes,
with all the associated inferences that the word bank has as far as mm-hmm. money, as far as private ownership. Mm-hmm. And rather than focusing on conservation, the focus is on operating the aquifer at a level that has never been seen before, where the upper range of the proposed operating range for much of the Vina subbasin, they set at the historic low levels that have ever been measured, and then would allow for it to go another 50 feet or below that, which would further dewater streams that are already being somewhat dewatered. You can see Chico Creek going dry as it flows through the campus during summer. It didn't mm-hmm. used to.
No, yes.
And the smaller tributaries are doing the same thing. But still, the groundwater level right now that exists is still high enough to sustain our urban forest in the city of Chico and to sustain what's left of our valley oak groves, which can reach down as deep as 80 feet, but no deeper than 80 feet, according to the Forest Service. And yet the operating range that has been proposed by the plans allow it to go well below 80 feet, especially during dry years. They're saying this is the limit we'll let it take down, except during dry years, and then it doesn't count. Because these limits only count when we have wet years or so-called normal years. So there's just no safeguards for the quality of life of the people that live up here. Because we need our trees, we need our forests, we need our urban forests and our valley oak trees to help us endure the climate, the existing climate. And the people that have domestic wells need to be able to use those domestic wells and not have to invest another $100,000 to drill down into the deeper portions of the aquifer system.
You've used the language twice, operating. It's odd to think of us operating nature's water storage area. It's not like a tank.
It is certainly not like a tank. And it also is it's based on a very dynamic underground system that is replenished in the foothills according to isotope studies and dives underneath so-called confining layers. And the deepest portion of the Tuscan aquifer that's tapped by Cal Water and tapped by all the new irrigation wells that are going in mm-hmm. Is a pressurized aquifer. In other words, once you hit it, once you puncture a confining layer down there at 500 to 700 feet, the water column comes up into the well casing, and as you depressurize it, that water level goes down, and the upper layers actually start leaking into the dewatered lower levels. This is what's happened in the San Joaquin Valley. The entire San Joaquin Valley has been so severely dewatered that all the shallow aquifers have leaked into the dewatered deep aquifer that used to actually hold up not just the streams, but hold up the shallow portion of the aquifer. And this is what's being proposed for the Vina subbasin, the Butte subbasin, and the Colusa subbasin. And the result of that, it creates storage space for experimental water banking projects, experimental, what they want to call recharge projects, where they would spread some floodwaters on the surface on orchards or run it through newly constructed canals. But this experiment is bound to fail for two reasons. One of them, the lower Tuscan, which is the foundation of the aquifer system, is replenished in the foothills. Secondly, the water is flowing toward where the demand is. And Glenn County has punched in hundreds of new wells in the past couple decades. And the water is leaking to the west. It's leaking underneath the river down deep and being pulled into these areas of evacuation in a whole different sub-basin. And it's all the same actual basin, the Tuscan aquifer system. But these politically designed sub-basins has split this the Tuscan aquifer into these politically designed areas. And so recharging it, I think, is going to be a fool's errand. The water's just going to leak over toward the west if we try to recharge it on this side. And as I said, we're not going to be able to recharge the deep portion of the aquifer because it's not recharged on the valley floor. It's pressurized because it's recharged up high.
Right.
But so when I see the term the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, I see the effort is to sustain a water supply, not to sustain the environment on which the groundwater depends. Mm-hmm. It is just another replication of what's happened in the Delta with the so-called co-equal plans to restore and protect the habitat in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta while maintaining a reliable water supply. Well, the water supply seems to be the priority, and the system, the ecosystem in the Delta continues to decline drastically year by year. And Aqua Alliance is challenging this. We're taking it to court. We've already had a hearing that validated that our complaints are legitimate. This is our lawsuits are not frivolous by any means. We provided enough data to the court for them to recognize there's something going on here that requires some sort of judicial overview. Because I think the state is really after the water in Northern California. And the scheme is to send the river water down and replace it with groundwater, have the people that are currently using surface water be able to sell year by year their surface water allocation and continue to grow crops by pumping groundwater, and then hope you get some floods later and see if we can experiment with recharge projects.
Mm-hmm.
But as Barbara was mentioning, this will result in a privatization of the aquifer. It carries great legal consequences. And these legal consequences can easily neuter any local county ordinances that prevent this sort of operation, this sort of conjoining groundwater and surface water to supply the water market. The legislature could easily pass a law to say, well, SGMA is now the defining law and your local ordinances are no longer in effect. Or the governor could declare a state of emergency and say that Butte County farms need to rely exclusively on groundwater that's declining and send the river water south for emergency purposes. There's various means that could override our local ordinances. And what we're insisting upon is a focus on conservation,
mm-hmm.
A focus on limiting the expansion of irrigated agriculture in the North State. A focus on eliminating some of the agriculture that has unwisely been developed in the San Joaquin Valley that relies exclusively on imported water from the Sacramento Valley. And coincidentally, a lot of the land on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley is contaminated with naturally occurring minerals and salts.
Mm-hmm.
It's substandard land that never should have been irrigated in the first place. And so these conservation measures need to be the focus rather than attempting to squeeze more water out of the system. It's going to crash the entire system. It would be a disaster for the economy of the state of California if they pursue this path of exploiting the resource and downplaying the need to recognize and honor carrying capacity within the Great Central Valley.
Could we talk a little bit about the kinds of crops that would fit with a sustainable groundwater management plan in both in the north part of the state and the south part. I'm alluding here, as you can recognize, the planting of perennial nut trees where the final product is largely shipped out of state anyway.
Well, that it's being shipped out of state is what's causing the economic turmoil within the nut industry. In my opinion, both annual and tree crops must be limited. Annual crops include rice, which is water intensive, but it can also provide beneficial wildlife habitat at certain
right.
times of the year.
Right.
And the ability to fallow annual production is an important adaptation tool that we have with rice. This year, a lot less rice was planted because of this ongoing dryness.
Right.
While there will always be a place for so-called permanent tree crops, orchards should not rely on imported water and should employ best management practices such as irrigation efficiency and delayed orchard replacement. So in the North State, these are two things that are being proposed that I support in SGMA, is figuring a way to more efficiently water these tree crops. And the farm, the orchardists up here, cannot keep their orchards in the ground permanently. So every few decades, they have to replace the trees for maximum production.
Mm-hmm.
And the standard idea is to pull it out and get a new crop in right away. While some farmers, some progressively minded farmers, recognize that they could save a lot of water if they just delayed replanting the crop for 1 year. And this is thousands of acres in Butte County alone that wouldn't be planted with such a water-intensive crop for a year, maybe 2 years, and providing incentive to these farms to do that and have them grow a dry crop on there, or a cover crop of some sort, would save a lot of water.
Who would provide any incentives to the farmers to do that?
I would hope that we could get grant money from the state. The state's got millions of dollars of grant money for actual management of the system, and crop subsidies are something that is very common in agriculture. So it would require organization at the state and federal level. Perhaps it's my understanding that that the price of nuts has really declined drastically over the past decade because of the overplanting in the San Joaquin Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And other countries are starting to plant, which is now the most popular crop for replanting, walnuts. They can grow walnuts in other places. So the export crop, the future of exporting nuts, is already somewhat tenuous. And I don't think that we need to not have them planted, but they shouldn't be planted in the San Joaquin Valley where they have to import water to grow them.
Right, right.
I think it's important to keep nut crops up here. Mm-hmm. In the Sacramento Valley, where they were originally planted in California, but to recognize the limitations on it and cease expansion, firstly. We should not be expanding irrigated agriculture, including nut crops. And we need to retire some of the land. There's land over in the west side of the valley, probably, that shouldn't have been developed. And we need to employ these conservation measures, really focus on those, rather than imagining we can figure a way to get more water
mm-hmm.
out of the ground and out of our natural systems. We've been blessed with a wonderful natural replenishment system here with our precipitation patterns, and we need to learn to live within the limits that we've been given by the natural system.
So, Jimmy, you said that there are some progressive farmers who are already aware of the kinds of changes that need to be made and are putting them into place. Is there an organization of farmers, or does the state?
No. The farmers have been organized under the leadership of the water marketers.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the late 90s, when the first real groundwater substitution happened, the nut farmers got hit hard because they didn't have the deep wells. And the deep wells were drilled by those who wanted to sell their surface water allocation. And so a lot of nut farmers had their wells dewatered, and they lost their crop that year. And they did get organized But now they've been organized under threat, saying, well, if we don't organize and do these recharge projects, then the state of California is going to come up and take over. This has been the big threat that has been leveled at them.
Right.
And our analysis is this is the state plan. The state is taking it over. This plan was not devised by the local stakeholders, in my opinion. These extremely low levels that are being proposed in aquifer management are the result of consultants working with the Department of Water, which was overseen by a gentleman who resigned abruptly and was immediately installed in Sacramento as the head of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Program. And so we think the farmers have been somewhat bamboozled.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, my respect and admiration of farmers is very high. They're brilliant. They're adaptable. I'm optimistic that they will eventually adjust to the climate instability that we're experiencing and the expanding mega drought with success. But I think they're going to resist restrictions on water supply by ramping up demand on groundwater as surface water reservoirs fail to meet the expectations.
Mm-hmm. So is there any kind of larger impetus, a state or some sort of organization that is looking at this from this other angle, from the angle of what farmers can do with water as it is, not water as they hope it will be? Is there any sort of state, you know, push for these kinds of changes? Because clearly nobody is going to do well if things continue as they are.
Well, that's why grassroots organizations such as Aqua Alliance, the California Water Impact Network, and the California Sport Fishing Alliance is so important. We have scientists, we have historians, we've got activists that are working on these and trying to bring the media, trying to bring the politicians up to speed on what on what the future holds if we don't employ these precautionary measures and continue to think that we can milk the natural system that has been destabilized and that inevitably periodically has dry periods. And so reaching out to politicians, to farmers, and to the media to bring them up to speed on this, to slow down the expansion of water extraction infrastructure and speed up conservation is what's needed.
And I
know we're short on time, but I think it's really important to discuss what's happening with the Tuscan Water District. The Tuscan Water District is not an organization yet. They're an offshoot from a group called the Agricultural Groundwater Users of Butte County that was formed at the advice of the aforementioned director of the Water Department, who has since moved on to be the head of SGMA. And they want to be the ones that implement this water banking. What they don't understand is they don't have any surface water rights. It's the water districts that have the surface water rights that will end up owning the groundwater. If they supply the water to this expanded canal system, which has been on the books and the state ever since the late 20th century, then the groundwater eventually becomes privately held by whoever diverted the water. And I insisted that the Vina attorney clearly lay out the legal consequences of groundwater banking or groundwater recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And they did produce a document that's on the Vina website that discusses how water that's diverted and placed into the ground is no longer legally groundwater. It's legally surface water owned by the diverters and can be used however they see fit. That is a huge threat to the commons. That's a huge threat to the quality of life up here. And as the Tuscan Water District attempts to be formed, it's a legal thing that requires landowner voting. They tried to do an election in the fall, and it was a legally mm-hmm. flawed election. They had to withdraw it. They're gearing up to do it again next year. And there's people that live within the footprint of the Tuscan Water District, as well as the people in Chico who are not in the district, but will be impacted if their plans continue to bolster the VINA groundwater sustainability plan. It's going to have impacts that will reverberate all the way up into Bidwell Park. So it's really important for people to keep aware of what's happening with this Tuscan Water District to prevent it from being formed, because it creates the illusion of local control over the aquifer system. Yeah. And it is simply an illusion. It's outside interest that will be driving the process and in the driver's seat, in the same way that the plan, even though they allowed us in the room during the stakeholder advisory committee meetings, as Barbara said, they pretty much ignored our input and just forged ahead anyway with this water banking plan. And to put it simply, it's my opinion that the VINA groundwater sustainability plan is basically a groundwater banking plan that includes pulling the water down low enough to create storage space and then importing water in an attempt to recharge it and thereby privatizing what is now owned in common. It's part of the commons, and it will be taken out of that account and into the account of privately funded entities.
We're going to keep up with you on this, Jim. We don't want to let this issue drop, so let's make sure we keep coming back to this. We have 5 seconds to sign off here. Our guest has been Jimmy Brobeck. He's the water policy analyst for Aqua Alliance and is doing a fabulous job staying on top of the Tuscan Water District issues. We appreciate so much what you do, and thank you for joining us on Ecotopia. Thanks, Jim.
You're certainly welcome.
North State Give and Take is made possible by the